$70 and $80 a barrel or $100 a barrel, and production continues to decline, where are we going to be when today's children, you know, when the Judiciary Chair's new baby or the representative from Bethel's new baby, when they are in the first or second grade, where are we going to be? Because it won't matter what the tax rate is, because it will just continue to go down, down, down. And that's what we need to look at. I don't think the destruction of the severance tax comes with this bill. I think the destruction of the severance tax comes as if we do nothing once again. The bill, as painful as this process has been, we tried very hard to look at the various concerns of the various factions. It was not a partisan effort. When those of us that tried to piece this together, without this faction of the legislature is concerned about this, we can try to tone it down and we give them that, and we get this faction of the legislature, which is how we came up with a sliding scale. The high tax people can have some comfort, and the low tax people can have some comfort. That was the goal. And I think in the political process, it's always easier to kill things. And it's always easier, everything heads to the middle and everything heads to status quo. That we all know that. You don't have to be here for 3 weeks before you realize how hard it is to actually do something. And this is a big do something, and we're a long ways from passing this bill, as we know. But I still think that it is still going to be a good move. We have to have the courage to try to think in a new way. And once again, we look at it in a couple of years. And as difficult as this process has been, those of us that are here, or those of us that are not here, you can lobby your legislator on what we got told in 2006. And in 2011, when the study comes out, let's take a look at what happened. And I think that just we need to have a little bit of courage to try to step out, because if we don't, we're just on the train downward. Thank you.
Other debate? Representative Len.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to underline what my friend just said. There's been a lot of debate on this bill, and that's very appropriate because of the monumental decision that we're going to make here tonight, that our constituents sent us down here, in fact, to make. There's a lot of things I like about this bill, and of course a lot of things I don't like about the bill, and that kind of amounts to what I would call mixed emotions. And the definition of mixed emotions would be seeing my worst political enemy drive over a cliff in my new car. I do share concerns with many of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. And based on a survey in my district, I believe I gave a copy to everybody here, I share the concerns of many of my constituents. Most of those concerns center around the debate between net versus gross. I've got to confess that some of that makes me a little bit nervous too. But I think some of those concerns have been addressed, and addressed very well, in the way this bill has been put together. I think we have a good compromise here. I want to congratulate my colleagues who put this compromise together. It's taken a lot of long hours, hard work, by very knowledgeable people who know what they're talking about, who want the same thing that I want, the same thing that my constituents want, a bill that brings a fair return from the people's oil to the state of Alaska, and most importantly, a bill that will spur oil and production, spur development, and spur investment, which brings the production. A bill, in fact, I hope that will lead to a gas pipeline. As my colleague from District 29 said so eloquently the other day, and with such heartfelt passion, we would, in fact, be derelict in our duties if we continued throwing away millions of dollars every day while we continue the debate by continuing to chase the impossible dream of some kind of a perfect compromise, which is never going to happen. That pleases all of us, regardless of our party, whatever our personal preferences. I've said repeatedly on this floor that we need to move forward on oil and gas issues, and this bill, I think, is the first step in that good direction. We need to come out of this special session with a good product, and I think this bill does exactly that. So I urge my colleagues to join me in voting yes on this bill. It's time to bite the bullet and get something done and put Alaska first.
Other debate? Representative Cotula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope I'm not at the wheel of the representative who spoke right before me's car heading over. I just want one point. I do feel that we do need to do something, and I'm respectful of the philosophy of those who think that this is it, but I have to point one thing out. If we're really concerned about what we want for the future, one thing that we really need to realize with this piece of legislation, well-meaning as it is, there's a disincentive to have greater production built into it, because with the rate going down on the amount of dollars spent per barrel, you could stay at a steady rate of spending and have declining production and take advantage of that lower rate. And it's a real problem in the bill. It exists, it's of concern, and it is just one small point among very many that we've talked about today that just give me great pause about that future for those wonderful children that I think we all claim as ours. Thank you.
Other debate? Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to leave most of this for tomorrow. I want people to just take a look at the formula that's in this bill tonight before we come back. And yesterday I gave a special order on how this bill, even though the intent is to try and find a way to get people to invest more, and the promise is if you invest more, you'll get a lower tax rate, and that's an interesting concept. The way the formula works, actually, is if you, as long as you invest the same and produce less, your tax rate keeps going down. It's the formula doesn't do what was intended. And I know it's hard to craft things together at this late date. It's really hard. You know, God knows how difficult it was for me to get just minor changes on the bills I've worked on through correctly. So please take a look at the formula, because the way it works, there's a factor that determines whether your tax rate goes down. And the bigger that number is, the lower your tax rate is. And that number is the amount you invest divided by the amount you produce. So let's say you invest $10, you produce 5 barrels. That number is 2, 10 over 5. Let's say you decrease your investment to 5 and you decrease your production to 1. Well, you've decreased your investment and your production. It's now 5 over 1. That number is 5. That would get you a lower tax rate. That's a hypothetical. But if you decrease production faster than you decrease investment, just check it out yourself, you get rewarded with a lower tax rate. I tried to give you yesterday this example of Exxon between 2001 and 2006 under this formula. With them continuing investment at about $175 million a year but decreasing production by 35%, they would have qualified for a lower tax rate as the reward, as the incentive in this bill. Mr. Speaker, I know what you're trying to do. If that's what you want to do, please do it. Because right now this bill is not producer pay, it's don't produce and don't pay. I know nobody wants to do that, but that's what's being done. And the worst thing about the ELF system that we had was the less you produced, the lower your tax rate was, and so companies developed these satellite fields and pretended they were not connected to the main field, and they got around the tax laws, and that's why the governor had to do that administrative order 2 years ago. But that was one of the weirdest things about the current law, not logical, and at some point companies kept their fields small enough to get the low tax rate, we suspect. So what do we do here? We replace that flaw with unintentionally the same flaw. The less you produce, the lower your tax rate. And one of the most frustrating things for me during the session, and it's only because I think I have a different perspective than other people do, and I do apologize. I see this bill as a problem in my view. I don't know how to say that in a way that makes people feel good about what they're doing. I know that everybody here is trying to do what they believe is the best thing possible, and nobody's trying to do anything wrong. And I guess I would just ask you to put the shoe on the other foot. And if I were proposing something that was about to pass that you thought were terrible, and I had convinced my caucus to go ahead with it, I think the debate would sound very similar from the other side. But the thing that's been so frustrating is people have said, some of you want a high tax rate, some of you want a low tax rate. And it's been said this does both, high tax rate if you don't invest, low tax rate if you do. There's no high tax rate in here, Mr. Speaker. I handed something out. It's one of these Econ 1 charts that the closest we ever came to a bill that would have taxed at the world average, but every bill that's passed any committee in this legislature, make no mistake about it, taxed at less than most places in the world tax. And the highest one was the senator from Kenai's 25% tax. And even though the world government take is about 67 to 70%, his did a government take of less than that, somewhere around 60 to 63%. That was the highest one. And then this one does a bit lower. And so what we have is the system where it's a 20% tax if you invest a lot, a 25% tax if you just hole up and don't invest anything. The punishment is a 25% tax. The punishment is a tax that is less than what you would pay in most places in the world. It's not a punishment, Mr. Speaker. For a company that does exactly what you don't want them to do, you're offering to tax them at less than what they pay in most places in the world. So this bill, as we see it, even though the 25% one that we saw once, which was the closest to the world average that never got there, this one raises, according to Econ1, about $600 million a year less than that 25% one. My guess is about $800 to $1 billion a year less at $60 a barrel than what we'd get if we taxed at the world average. So, Mr. Speaker, two things for people to think about overnight. Look at that tax range. Do you really want to charge such a low rate to companies that decide not to invest anymore in the state? And do you really want to reduce a company's tax rate for decreasing investment as long as they decrease their production more than they decrease their investment? Just think about that overnight, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've not risen today or on this particular issue for some time. And I have, since we've begun, been on the lower end of the tax rate on the 2020 side of this. I'm proud of the progressivity that we introduced initially. And like voters here in the primary race on August 22nd, as much as we flounder about for a couple of months prior to the election cycle, many of them don't tune in until the last 3 or 4 or 5 days before an election. And some of us have been taken from our families, some from our homes, some from our private sector duties. I happen to probably be in that latter group. And I have not paid as good attention to this issue as it has developed over the last week, nor did I participate in any of the dialogue prior to that. And I thank all the members who have so vigorously put their brains and backs and shoulders and time into this issue. That being said, I think there's something wrong with this bill. And I'm going to vote for it today, like all my friends that play Texas Hold'em. I'm going to go look at another card I want to see. But there's something wrong with this. And I figure, those voters who don't engage until the last few days, which is their privilege and their prerogative, so it is my privilege and prerogative, since I don't sit on any committee that sees any of this bill, and I wish that I would have, because I am the resource co-chair, and I would have been delighted to have been engaged on a panel, although I know I certainly had the option, and I sat in and listened in on many of the conversations. I want to go get our money right now, this year and next year. But I think that this is a lesser bill than many of the proposals that we've seen. And I think that as we uncover more of it, and it may take us into next year to uncover that, and we may very well pass this bill or variation on it this year to go get our money, which I'm an advocate of. But I think that what we're going to find is that, just like Hurricane Katrina has driven up the cost of labor and materials, and my friends that are building now, sheetrock is hard to come by. I think that we're going to see some significant inflation in the cost of materials up north, and that in spite of what we do, whether it's because we're in an inevitable decline of production, or if it's going to take several years in order to stem that decline, I think that we're going to see the cost of these credits increase and the rate of this tax come much more closely to mirror the 2020 that I was first in favor of. But I saw earlier today, Mr. Speaker, when I was not sitting on this floor but watching the monitor in the speaker's chambers, and we were doing a little over-under guessing on the length of the speeches that some of the members in this body would make. And I watched two lobbyists prance out of that speaker's chambers and go meet with somebody from the administration, and it was putrid. And I know what that looks like. I know what I saw. And what I saw was not very attractive, and it's not why I ran for public office, and I was offended by what I saw. And I like lobbyists. I think they're nice people. I'm always mindful of the fact that they're paid to be nice, that they're paid to buy me dinner, that they're paid to tell me how handsome I look and how attractive the ladies are. But I know when I see something foul, and I saw something foul earlier today, and I am suspicious of these producers. And some things arise, some things amiss. But I'm gonna pay, and I'm gonna vote yes to see another card. And I want to go get our money this year, and I don't want to have a debate over retroactivity next year. I want our money. But something's wrong with this, and this body turns over, I think, about 10 members a year, sometimes by attrition, sometimes by a manner which is less desirable for some of us. And I hope that I get to come back next year. It looks pretty good, just so you know. I expect for us to be mindful of this, and even though I'm told that I'm only going to have one bite at this apple to change tax policy probably once in my tenure here in the legislature, that's not the way I see it. If this thing sucks, if this thing's broke, if this thing doesn't make the right amount of money, I'm going to be here and I'm going to be pounding on the table. I'm going to be one ugly, unfriendly to all lobbyists and to the industry if it doesn't work. If I got tricked, if I get fooled, if I get deceived. I don't know what else to say after that. I'm going to sit down now. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
At ease. Back to order. Any more debate? Representative Ledoux.
Well, Mr. Speaker, usually when I get up to support a bill, I say something to the effect of, it's a good bill, vote for it. Well, I'm supporting this bill, but not because I think it's a good bill. I mean, everybody who's talked to me knows that I wanted to see higher progressivity, I wanted to see a higher rate, and I also wanted to see a tax on the gross as opposed to a tax on the net. On the other hand, I firmly believe that you should not let the perfect stand in the way of the possible. Somebody once told me, politics is the art of the possible. I don't want to come back next year after leaving hundreds of millions of dollars on the table this year. So I am prepared to vote for this bill because it is something, and that something in this case is better than nothing.
Other debate. You ready for the question? The question is, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe that this bill focuses on the wrong thing. It's the wrong approach. And I think what we all want is a fair shake for Alaska on the revenue that we get, and we want a gas line. And this doesn't focus on forcing construction of a gas line. It doesn't focus on getting access to facilities on the North Slope. We had the chance to break the monopoly power, and we chose not to take it. It's just unfathomable to me that we didn't take the chance to break that monopoly power and let explorers in. I'm still just dumbfounded why we didn't take that chance. This bill just it gives a huge amount of money back to the oil companies on gas, and doesn't focus on the real problems about why production is falling. Production's falling because we can't handle the amount of gas that comes up with the oil today, and we're not focusing on it in this bill. I think this is the wrong approach. Thank you.
Okay, any other debate? Representative Hawker.
Hey, Mr. Speaker, thank you, sir. You know, I think we're finally getting there, because I don't see a single person on this floor, sir, that likes this bill. Something as contentious as this issue, you know, we all have to push each other's horizons, push each other's envelopes, until we find that point where everybody's just sufficiently uncomfortable that we've got a product that will probably be durable enough to take us through to the future. Everyone knows I would be eminently capable of standing here and filibustering for about 2 hours, which I promise not to do. But it's just in its simplest form. The reason I dislike this bill, why I'm uncomfortable with it, is because the degree that it does raise taxes on industry. Yep, I sincerely believe that no government has ever taxed an industry into productivity. The bill before us, make no bones about it, despite the arguments that says we're not going to see a penny, this bill's going to reduce severance taxes to nothing. We all have placed an awful lot of faith in a lot of different economists, and I tell you, the most recent estimates, projections, economic analysis I have says that this bill will triple our current tax rates, triple, take it up three times. By the time we allow the encourage the reinvestment of some of those profits in Alaska, we're going to have effectively more than doubled the tax rates on industry. That's huge. That's a risk I worry about. I know an awful lot of the people in my district work in industry-related jobs, and if they don't work in the oil and gas industry, they work in the construction industry that's driven by oil and gas. If they don't work in that industry, they work in the schools that are paid for and needed because there are kids in those schools whose families work in the oil and gas industry. Now, Alaska is an oil province, and that's something we all have to be used to. But as uncomfortable as I am with the increase, which is estimated by our economists here, an increase in the severance tax of $2.6 billion at today's oil prices. $2.6 billion. That is essentially, that's more than 60% of our existing total take. Just my question, $2.6 billion, and I just like to leave everyone with a thought, and let's put that into perspective. Boy, it's sure easy to throw big numbers with lots of zeros around on this floor, but when you put it in perspective, that $2.6 billion a year that this is going to pick up at today's prices equates to $7.3 million a day that we're leaving on the table as long as we sit here arguing. That $7.3 million a day we're leaving on the table is $300 million an hour for every hour we sat here and argued this today. My quick calculation is this argument today has cost the state $2 million. But let's even take it down a little lower. I've probably been standing here for 3 minutes. Those minutes cost us $5,000 apiece. I hope the public is getting its money for this time, and I think it is time that we say yes to this proposal and get us forward to the real mission at hand, which is monetizing Alaska's gas. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there any other debate? Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, we've failed twice to pass a bill from the body that we could get the support for enough to go all the way through the triple hurdles to get a bill into law. And last night, after the comments regarding problems in the bill that were made from the downtown Anchorage representative, I asked for some figures, and I passed them out to you, and I'm not going to march you through them here this late in time, but I'd like to point out that the on the Exxon example for openers, we talked about how that rate was whittled away. But if you look on the second page, when you get a chance to look at this, you'll find out that under the situation that we face with here today, with the progressivity that's been put in this bill, and with the adjustment for gold plating, if you take all of the credits and apply them, the average rate on the average tax rate that we would be charging, just taking that one company that was mentioned yesterday, these figures were generated by revenue overnight, exceeds 28%. And I think another thing in here that is worth pointing out, some of the items are given equal weight with the larger items. You know, it's a lot more serious. Using a hunting camp example, if your grandson runs in and says, "Grandpa, there's a bear on the meat rack," that's a lot more serious than "there's a mouse on the meat rack." And a lot of times today, as we do the discussions, things that are mice are not called out in their appropriate size, and things that are that are much more serious are not given the differential weight. So I think that's important to point out. But at the end of the figures here, if you go through all of them, remember that average tax rate that we've come up with in this compromise bill is over 28%. And if you look at the effect of the rate change from the investment, the credit that they're given for the investment, that's about $59 million compared to if you look at what the situation is under the status quo for this one company, just taking 2006 numbers and applying this bill to them, the current broken ELF system, which the minority would like us to take a gross system, the system like we have now, and then hang bells and whistles on it to make it more responsive. And what we've done, we've been all around this debate, and we've come up with this compromise bill. But the ELF system generates $440 million from that company. The governor's bill, $545 million. And if we pass this, $802 million. We also ask him to look slope-wide on this bill and compare it. If we don't do anything, stand in here and let this go another year through another failure, then $1.3 billion is what we'd get under the ELF, $2.5 under the governor's bill, and $3.6 under this compromise bill. This is not a bill to hang our heads about. This is a bill that's had a lot of hard work put into it, and some of the concerns about the bill are legitimate, but when you put the size on them appropriately, they're not as serious as they might seem. And I think that we've got to do something as a body. We've failed twice. Everybody that knows the efforts as they've gone along know that I was a high rate, high progressivity, no clawback, January 1 retroactive, and separating oil and gas. I've been in those camps, and so have several other people on both sides of the aisle. But we've come to this bill that it's an excellent, given the options and all of the people that have to be satisfied to jump this triple hurdle. This is a bill that deserves serious consideration, and it is a bill that you can be proud of. Remember one other thing. When I first came down here, an old legislator told me that this place is a 61-passenger bus. Governor's in the driver's seat, and he's got the brakes and the gas. There's 20 senators behind him, other bodiers behind him. They're in the next 20 seats, and behind them are folks like us in the final 40 seats. So it fills out the 61-passenger bus. And in those 20 and 40 seats, every seat has a steering wheel, and every steering wheel is connected. So the difficulty of getting something through the body that actually makes all of the constituencies able to live with it is, just if you just think about that analogy, is a bit of a job, because you can steer one way or another just for all you're worth, and you've got to take in the account that you got 60 other people who got their hands on that thing. So I think if you can remember that some of this stuff that you've heard today, we've been over time and time again, and I've been working as hard as I know how to get what I think is right out of this. But I think what we have is a fair deal, and I believe that it should be supported. Another thing is, I've walked out of the room after final negotiations in my other life a lot of times, and I don't remember a successful walking out of the room, whether it's a labor negotiation or what, that I didn't need a couple of Advil. Really seriously. That's exactly how I feel about this situation. Is none of us in this room is happy with this bill. But this bill is a good bill. And so I think that it's worth considering. The other thing is, anytime you walk out of a serious negotiation, there's always the non-participant wiseacre. Take a labor situation that says, well, we asked for $2 and we got 80 cents an hour. So he's not happy. And there's always a boardroom when you go to try to sell it to them, and the guy says, well, geez, you gave away the farm. We sent you in there with four bits. So however you look at it, we got to remember one thing. That as the representative from Anchorage, someplace, Hillside, I guess, mentioned, we're losing between $6 and $7 million a day. And if we miss this opportunity and you think it's going to be retroactive, you better think hard about that kind of a gamble with the public's money. We couldn't even move it back to January 1 when all of the indication was before us that we'd missed a few bucks going down the line and probably ought to try to get some of those back. But we couldn't lift as hard as we wanted. We could not get that to retroactive to go back to January 1 of 06. Don't miss this opportunity. It isn't the best bill. I'm upset with it. I'm going to push the green button, and we're going to put as much pressure as I know how from on the other folks to take a serious look at this and not to mess with it too much to where it can't get back through here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Speaker. Minority Leader.
When I came into this body, I could grab that thing, and it didn't clack. But now I've got something on my hand here. And I appreciate the hard work that people have put into this bill. I do. I appreciate people who come at this debate out of principle and out of conviction. I don't agree with all the principle. I don't agree with all the convictions. But I respect it. One of the prior speakers talked about sometimes you need courage to change. Sometimes you need courage to stand up for what you believe in. Sometimes that courage makes you say no. I look at this long formula that's the basis of this bill, and I don't understand it. I don't think too many people in this room do understand it. I don't think that this state will understand it for years and years. I think the state will fight with lawyers and accountants from oil companies, just trying to understand it. It's a complex formula built around net profits that fundamentally won't serve Alaska well. Yes. We will save or achieve more money this year and maybe next year, as long as oil prices stay high, until the oil companies figure out how to move their books around so that they're not paying the kind of taxes that they should pay. I heard intimation that maybe the oil companies are going to pull up stakes and leave or somehow trim back if we don't make it easy for them to produce. Well, I keep hearing ads, too, saying they've got these 50-year plans for Alaska. I hear their CEOs talk about how critical Alaska's gas is for their future. Doesn't sound to me like they're getting ready to up stakes. It sounds to me like they're driving a hard bargain and negotiating as tough as they can with us. And if we want to be real partners, and if we don't want to be patsies, we have to stand up to them. Not just for the money that's on the table this year, but for the money that's on the table for the many years to come. For the many, many years to come. Because when I look into Alaska's crystal ball and I see its future, I see this big argument as if somehow the tax rates we're passing today and acting on today and the tax structure we're working on is going to change the geology of the North Slope. Well, I have news for you, Mr. Speaker. Our power is not so great that this body has the ability to change geology. It's not going to make that difference. Investment decisions will be made, yes, in part because of the tax structure here, but they're going to be made because the high price of oil or the low price of oil into the future is going to be an incentive for the oil companies. That's how the market works. It's going to be made because they don't want to strand their assets up on the North Slope. They don't want the pipeline to shut off at 400,000 barrels because then all those assets up there will be stranded. They won't be able to count them on their books. Their stock prices will be affected, and it won't work out for them. They're going to do everything they can to deliver oil to market and to deliver gas to market, because at a certain point, having the reserves isn't enough for the oil companies. They have to monetize them just like we do. I look into Alaska's future, and I see a time where oil production's in decline. I see a time where oil prices will go down. I see a time when federal largesse, the federal money that comes into the state, will not be as great as it is today. I see a time when interest rates go up. Those are four horsemen of the apocalypse riding at us right now, riding at our economy. And if we're not prepared by making sure that we get the best deal we can for selling our oil on the open market, we're not doing this state the full justice it needs done. We're not getting full value for our oil. And I appreciate that others think that my perspective is wrong. But when I push the red button, I want people to know why. I'm pushing the red button because I'm looking out for Alaska's future. Because I think there's a better way. Because I think that with greater effort, this body could have found a way to work together in a better fashion that served the state. And I'm hoping in the waning days of this special session and the next groundhog session that we come to as well, that we find those answers. Because there are good people in this body who disagree. But there's a lot more that we agree on. And if we'd had the opportunity to structure this debate in a way that could have brought us together, I think it would have been much more fruitful. And I hope that the course that the majority has decided to follow will yield the right kind of results. I hope so. I just don't think it will. But I wish you all good luck, and I'm pushing the red button.
Any other debate? Are you ready for the Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. These special sessions, we've been dealing with this bill, these bills. And we've been talking about credits and rates. The structure of the bill, the nature, how it's going to unroll. But I think the underall, the driving factor that we should be considering a lot more than it appears to me that we have is the constitutional requirement that we maximize the resources of the state of Alaska for its people. Today we heard a series of amendments from the minority, from my caucus, that were well represented, and if you had been considering them in what we heard from other members of the body in a business approach of what's the best thing to do, it would have gotten a lot more consideration and it would have looked at a lot stronger. The entire competitive nature of Alaska's North Slope is locked up. It excludes competition. It excludes further development. And the competitive nature of this world, it is ripe for things to happen. But we have once again, from my feelings, from my perspective, done the wrong things and have limited that. The exclusion, not excluding gas from the oil, is simply a reminder for Bartlett's quotation, not from the dictionary of Bartlett's quotation, but from our famous Bartlett, who was presided over part of the state's constitutional convention, when he said, "Beware of exploitation in the guise of development." And when we don't do the things we needed to do today, that was separate oil from gas, open up the ability for independents to have access, those are two simple, basic things that we have simply neglected to do. We would have done more for this state by passing those two things and not worried about the rates and the credits. And we would have seen the independents come in. We would have seen more lobbyists here next year, more different companies looking to do business in Alaska. And there's another aspect of having independents in Alaska that it doesn't get discussed. It means there's more businesses that are independent from the industry because they outsource a lot of work. It means the industry alliance has more work because the producers themselves are not doing a lot of the work. That there's more jobs on the slope, that it's more diversified. That our entire nature of the North Slope and how it does business, and I've spent many years up there watching that, is expanded. Not just because there's more contracts out there for doing things, for exploration and development. There's more businesses doing them. and more business want to do business with other people. And when we look down the road, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, I'm worried that our children are going to look back and say, what happened? Where did it go? Calling what we're doing revenue neutral means we'll get no return on our gas. It means in 30 years, the school we built today, we'll be arguing about putting a new roof on it or replacing it. You know, the entire debate and how it went forward sometimes was mixed and matched, and realizing, walking these halls, how alliances were formed and broken and reshifted, and coming out with this bill is troublesome. And I recognize that a lot of people's concerns are making sure that we don't walk away from this session and leave $1.5 billion on the table. But in the last 4 years, we've probably left $4.5 billion on the table before we got to that $1.5 billion. And I don't know what, you know, well, I do know what sprung loose the ability to start talking about oil taxes. And it's been detrimental to the state of Alaska. There's some members that have been advocating the change of the old system for a long time. It's not that we want to go back to it or continue it. We want something that's more in line with what the people of the state of Alaska expect us to do. Not at the end of a third special session, but every day down here, doing the right thing every time. And we all have difference of opinion of what that is, but if we all did the right thing, what we believe was the right thing every time, we would have been closer to a better number for the people of the state of Alaska that plows our roads, that lets the governor build new roads through wildernesses, that lets us build new schools. Because I was here as staff in my other life when the price of oil was at $9, and it was tight. It was tight. Just, you couldn't get a feeler gauge through some of these bills because there was no money to spend, and everybody was arguing over nickels and dimes. And from my perspective, this bill will inevitably return us to those days. If those years in the past we had a different formula that worked, it wouldn't have been so bad. It might have been a lot easier. We might not have had so many schools with blue tarp roofs. And I'm just concerned we're going back there again. Because as long as it took to open up our oil and gas tax structure, it's going to be that long again. Now, maybe we'll have the opportunity to come back next year and tweak it. The gentlemen that walk the halls will have a lot to say about that. Because every year there's, like my friend from Fairbanks said, about 10 people turn over here for various reasons. New people have to be educated. Those guys will be walking the hall, and we love them. They don't buy me dinner. I'm delighted for that. But where this takes us is down a road we've been to before that doesn't lead us to a place where, at the end of the day, we've done the best thing for Alaska. And I'm going to be pressing the red button.
Other debate? You ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 3001 pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
30 yeas, 10 nays.
And so the vote of 30 yeas and 10 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 3001 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
I understand that the roll call vote on the passage of committee substitute for House Bill 3001 Finance be considered the roll call vote on the effective date.
There's an objection. Ready for the roll call? The roll call is the effective date clause. That is. The gubernatorial candidate had to set the lieutenant governor candidate straight. So here we go again. The roll call vote on the effective date clause. Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
40 yeas, 0 nays.
So the vote of 40 yeas and 0 nays, the effective date clause has passed the House. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on CSHB 3001 and ask that reconsideration be brought up tomorrow.
Okay, reconsideration has been given on House Bill 3001. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
There's no further legislation in today's calendar.
Are there any citations today?
There's no citations.
Do you have any unfinished business? We got, as usual, we have a lot of it, but we're not going to deal with it right now, right? Are there any committee announcements? Any other announcements? Any special orders? Representative Kurtula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The subject is Rudy Gavina.
Whatever it was, I'll go ahead.
Gentleman's name. Uh-huh. Thank you. This last week saw the passage of one of Juneau's patriarchs. In his 90s, Mr. Rudy Gavina from the Filipino community passed on, and it's a real loss. He was at many community functions, always very cheerful, very supportive of people being active in public office, and he's going to be sorely missed. He came to America on a boat when he was 14 years old. He was an Alaskan. And it was really quite an honor to have known him. So if we'll all just think of his family and his wife, Betty, that would be great. And thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You want to go a little moment of silence? Or?
It's late. Let's have a quick moment of silence.
Please stand.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Are there any other special orders? Representative Roquefort. That is... House, come back to order. Do we have any other special orders? Then Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 1 p.m. Sunday afternoon, August 6th.
Without objection, we'll be in adjournment until 1 p.m. tomorrow.